Hello and welcome to the Displaced African podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog, which can be found at www.thedisplacedafrican.com. Hello, 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 this is Mwangi here, and this is part 2 of my interview with the one and only Kirk Nugent. If you have not listened to part 1, please go to www.thedisplacedafrican.com, go to the category section, go to Displaced African Podcasts, and listen to part 1. It puts a lot of what he's about to say in context. As speakers often say, open your hearts, open your minds, be receptive, inspirational human being, wonderful story, enjoy. So you got that $1,500 check and you kept going. Did you keep going with that, with those guys who you wrote the AIDS poem for, or did you just go back?
Yeah, they would send me to perform every other month. So I'll be getting $750. It worked at about $750 every month. It wasn't enough to sustain me. I remember one time they sent me to Texas. And I was going to be in Texas for 2 days, and I had no money, completely broke. I got on the plane with not even a penny. They were putting me up in a hotel. And when I got there, I said, man, I don't know how I'm going to survive for 2 days. I'm skinny, but I still need to eat. I need a little something. So I checked into the hotel because they paid for it, didn't have to pay for that any money. And I was staying on the 20th floor. I got in the elevator. The elevator went up to the 20th floor, and the door opened of the elevator. Bing! And right outside the elevator was a fruit basket. I said, I got back in the elevator and went up to the 21st floor. Bing! Door open. Fruit basket. Got back in the elevator, went to the 19th floor. Bing! Fruit basket. I went to my room, dumped my everything out of my book bag, and went from the second floor all the way up to the 25th floor, dumping fruits into that bag. And for 2 days, I became a vegetarian. That's all I ate, fruits. So I found an ingenious way to survive when it came to pursuing this passion.
Wow. So from that company, like, how did you end up, like, doing stuff like being on Queen Latifah, Def Jam, NAACP? Was it just gradual evolution? Did you sign up with someone else? How did that happen?
Well, a lot had to do with stepping out on faith, because a lot of times we never move because we wanted to know what's going to happen. But a lot had to do with me stepping out on faith, kept performing the poetry, and people would see me and ask me what happened. How I got into a lot of the areas was a gentleman who was an agent on the college market saw me and said, you know what, you'd be good for the college market. And would you want to perform in colleges? I said, dude, I want to perform wherever. It doesn't matter. So he became my agent, and he started actively getting me engagement in colleges. And now I'm regularly being booked, but I'm being booked in February, Black History Month. And that was the only time I'd be booked, because no matter what I did on stage, they would see me. Oh, my God, the Negro, he's so talented. We got to bring him in February. And it would be Black History Month. So I got very depressed from that, because I believed that my message was greater than just – it wasn't for blacks, and it wasn't for whites, and it wasn't for Jews. I believe my message was universal, because it was a message that was empowering. So I stopped showcasing, and I started calling colleges on my own and develop a rapport. And it took me probably another 5 years to build my business back to a point where I could be regularly booked. I did a lot of stuff for free, you know, just perform, did whatever, just to give myself more exposure. I was always out there. And once the internet and all this technology started coming about, I started making videos for my stuff, putting it on the internet, and just continued to pursue my passion. But all of that came about, the Queen Latifah, the writing, it came about from me going after my dreams. To tell you an interesting side story, when I came from Jamaica and went to the all-black school that I told you about, the high school,
yep,
there was a young girl there who, her mom was my art teacher. Her mom name was Dana. Her mom was Miss Owens. The girl name was Dana Owens, and Dana was into hip-hop. That's all she wanted to do. She loved hip-hop. She loved rapping, and she would battle all the people after school. And her mother told her, this is not the way to go, Dana. Dana, you need to go to college. You need to get an education. Leave this hip-hop, this rap thing alone. But Dana was disobedient. Dana followed her heart. She pursued her passion. She kept doing the rap thing, the hip-hop thing, whatever it was called. And she kept pursuing that. And today, no one calls her Dana Owens. Everyone calls her Queen Latifah.
Wow. Dang.
We went to school together.
Ah, so that, of course, that's how Queen Latifah happened. Okay.
No, she didn't remember me. We weren't in the same class or anything. Oh. I just knew who she was.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew her mom. I knew her mom. But, yeah, she would not be able to connect the dots, but we were in the same school at the same time. And I remember her when she would have this little crowd around her after school, and she would be doing her rap or hip-hop, everything. I remember her.
All right.
But I faded into the shadow. I was nobody. No one knew me.
Okay. So you've been a speaker now for more than 10 years, isn't that right?
I've been doing poetry. I've been officially like a speaker when I started getting my first, probably around 8 years, something like that. Maybe around in 2000, I evolved, started growing into the speaker. But I started doing poetry around 1997.
Wow, so
yeah, around 1996, 97. Yeah, because I quit my job 1996. That was the last time I punched a time clock. That was the last time I worked for anyone. I always tell people, I don't care what the economy is doing. If I come back and there's a pink slip on my desk, it is because I left it there.
Wow. And so now that you've spoken to, like, and how many colleges have you spoken to now? About hundreds, thousands?
I would say maybe close to, if it's not 1,000, it's close to 1,000.
So, of course, you've interacted with, like, with a lot of young people and, you know, heard a lot of stories. So, like, what would you say are, like, the principles that separate someone who goes into university and comes out and becomes a great person and someone who goes into university and comes out deader inside? What would be the principles that separate those two people?
It's always discipline, for one. It's always a clear vision. The man with the vision and the lack of funding will always beat the man with funding and no vision. If you have a vision, if you have a purpose for your life, I knew what I went through as a child. I knew what I didn't want in my adult life. So I always had a vision of how I wanted my life to turn out. And I was always driven like that. The other thing is I never cared about what the neighbors thought. I wasn't concerned about, well, if I do this, you know, what are the neighbors going to say? Or if I don't finish school, what are the neighbors going to say? If I'm not getting good grades. I always was true to my heart. So the difference between the person who goes into college or university and comes out with nothing and the person who comes out with more or everything is usually discipline. How do you apply your time? How do you spend your time? Who do you associate with? Are the people that you're running with, are they eagles? Are they pigeons? What are they doing with their life? You know, there's a saying that we had in Jamaica. It says, you show me your company and I'll tell you who you are. I could look at your peers and tell where you're going. So it's all about having the discipline to really pursue what is it that you want. Even if you don't know what you want to do, just say, well, maybe if I knew what it would be and do something. If you don't like that, leave and do something else and keep doing until you find what you love. But most people don't have the discipline and they don't have the tenacity to stay with something long enough once they find something that they like and build it into something that works. And especially here in America, people are filled with fear. They hang on to what they call job security. They do a 9-to-5. No, there's no job security. Any given moment, the boss can fire you. Any given moment, Enron, they can steal all your money, your pension fund. So there's no security. The only security is what you build for yourself. So you have to have the discipline and the vision to plan and build a life for yourself and the discipline to go after it.
And how would you instill that, like, that discipline? Because a lot of people, you can tell them, they know they need to be disciplined, but they just don't get it. So how would you instill discipline into people?
If the desire for what they want isn't great enough, the discipline will always wane. Because it's always more fun to sit back and watch television and to spend your time doing something that's not really productive. But if your desire, if there's something that you want so badly that you know, I don't care what it takes, I'm going to go out here, I'm going to do whatever. And there are no guarantees because you could do whatever and it still doesn't happen. But if your desire is great enough, you will constantly persist and you will constantly structure your time. But if the desire isn't great enough, it will not happen. So the thing is, how do we increase that desire? How do we get to a point where we want something so badly that we can taste it in our mouth and we're willing to go after it? And the way to build that desire is to constantly feed the stuff that you want, to constantly look at, well, where do I want to go, and what will this feel like when I finally achieve this dream? And you let your imagination run wild with it. And as your imagination run wild with it, you will become more tenacious, you will become more productive, and you will also get greater ideas how to take you to where you want to go. But if the desire isn't great enough, the discipline will never be there. You can't have discipline without desire. You know, someone can come over and be an overseer and say, well, you have to do this, and, you know, they have a lash to your back. But the minute they're gone, you're going to fall back into whole habits or comfortable habits. So you definitely need desire. Desire is a large part of it.
And so that people can, like, get a clear idea of what this vision that would pull people, that would give people desire would look like, what was your vision specifically when you quit that job in 96? Like, what were you seeing in your mind? What were you smelling, tasting?
In my mind, because the thing is, I also speak about stepping out on faith. I never knew that I could be a motivational speaker. I never knew that I could make a living doing poetry. I never knew all of this. What I knew is that I felt great. I felt alive when I was on that stage. And I liked that feeling. That was my drug. That was my high. So now I started, because, again, another life lessons. The quality of your life will always be in direct proportion to the quality of the questions that you ask. I'll say it again. The quality of your life will always be in direct proportion to the quality of the questions that you ask. Most people ask the victim questions. Well, why is this happening to me? And why did this guy cheat on me? And why is... Those questions are victim questions. The questions I started asking, okay, Kirk, you love this poetry thing. How can you take that and make it support you? And once I start playing with those questions, well, whenever I come off the stage, people always ask me, oh, my God, I love that poem. Do you have that written anywhere? So I went home and I typed up the poems and went to a store and stapled it together, and that was my first book. When I came off the stage, okay, here are these poems that I did tonight. Have it on sale tonight for $5. And that would give me enough money to sustain me to build a bigger book and a better book. And I always knew the vision was, I want to make a living. I want to be able to live and live well off my gift, off my talent. So the question I kept asking was, how can I do this? Kirk, how can you improve? How can you get, even when I started doing the college market, how can I get a better relationship with these schools so they bring me back? What can I do to add more value so they will see that, oh, Kirk Nugent is the person to bring? How can I get the students so excited that they go out and talk to the college professors about me to bring me back? Well, one of the ways I could put a poem together with such a catchy hook that speak into their life that they'll just keep saying it. So all through my speech, I'm saying, pursue your passion, pursue your passion. So even when I leave, they're still saying, pursue your passion. So the teachers and the orientation people are like, well, what is this pursue your passion about? We got to bring it back, because it's a year later and people are still talking about pursue your passion. So it's the questions. You have to know where you're going, and you start asking the questions, how can I get there? What is it that I need to do to get there? Who are the people that I need to leave behind? What are the channels on television I need to stop watching? What are the stuff on radio I need to stop listening to? What are the books that I need to read? Who are the people that have gone before me? Who are the successful people? What are they doing? What are they reading? What are they listening to? Who are they associated? And you ask the questions, and once you find the answers, you take the action, because that's important. If you just sit home and ask questions, now you're a broke philosopher. But once you start taking the actions, now you'll see something. Life will begin to meet you. Something will manifest.
Wow. And so, were you always a good speaker, or was it something that evolved over time?
No. I learned how to speak at age 5. In Jamaica, I couldn't talk. I had to go to a speech therapist. I was extremely shy, low self-esteem, so at age 19, I would not look you in your eye when I spoke to you, much less to be on a stage and be seen.
Wow.
The first time I went on stage, because I didn't memorize my poem like I do, and I was reading off the paper, and you could see the paper shaking so hard when I held it with both hands. You could look at my pants and see my legs shaking through my pants. I was scared, man. I was scared to death. But once I did it, something clicked, like, Kurt, this is what you came to do. So I started rehearsing and practicing and becoming a little bit better and a little bit better. And as I did that, I got a little more confident and a little more confident. And as I did that, the audience got a little more enthused and a little more enthused, and everything just catched on. But nothing came together perfectly. I had to work on me. I had to spend hours and hours working on me. I go on stage and I say, pursue your passion. People say, oh my God, that is so brilliant. And, oh, you must have a great memory because you memorized that long poem. No, I have great discipline. I have to read that poem 1,000 times to myself before I can memorize 2 or 3 lines out of it. I'm not brilliant. I just do a lot of stuff over and over and over and over until I get it right. I have a saying that I say, I said, Kirk, most people rehearse until they get it right. Kirk Nugent rehearsed until he can't get it wrong. That's the difference.
Wow. All right. So, like, now that you're doing the speaking thing, let's assume like there's someone at home and they want to become like a speaker. They sit at home. They have this passion to really touch people's lives. They feel like they have something they want to say. How would they become a speaker in the way the speaking world works now?
Okay, that's a great question because I am a speaker, but I never went through any of the channels we were supposed to go through. I've been in this business 10 years. I don't have a 4-page brochure. They say you could never make it without a brochure because you need brochures to mail to people. I have never spent a dime on a stamp to mail anything to anyone. So how do you build this business to become a speaker? Well, what I did do, which is very important, I studied the leaders. Les Brown had a speaking course, and this course was $5,000. I didn't have any money to pay $5,000 to go to Les Brown course, but I knew that in order to get where I want to go, I got to be a part of this course. So I went to my mom, and my mom had so much faith in what I was doing at the time because she realized I risked everything to be out here. She gave me the money, and that's how I got into Les's course. I paid someone who knew what they were doing, but before I even got there, before I even got to Les's thing, I kept studying on my own. I kept watching other speakers. I would buy their tapes, the $20 or whatever I pay for the tapes, and I would watch their tapes, and I kept
like which speakers
getting better. I always, whatever Les put out, I always bought, because Les is my favorite speaker by far. Brian Tracy has a lot of content. Les has a lot of inspiration, motivation. You need to put the two together in order to get where you want to go. So I always loved the way Les had all these quotes at the tip of his tongue. And I remember Les would end his speeches with a quote. If you want a thing bad enough to go out and fight for it, to work day and night for it, to give up your time, your peace, and your sleep for it, if all that you dream and scheme is about it, and life seems useless and worthless without it, and if you gladly sweat for it and fret for it and plan for it, and lose all your terror of opposition for it, and if you simply go after the thing that you want with all of your capacity, strength and sagacity, faith, hope, and stern pertinacity, if neither famine nor gout nor sickness of body and brain can keep you away from the thing that you want, if dog and grim you beseech and beset it, with the help of God you'll get it. And I'll hear them be like, wow, oh my God, I want to do that. I want to be there. Wow, that's amazing. So I went out and I started taking speeches that I would give and write into a poem. I would take something like a Pursue Your Passion. I take all the points and I say, I'm going to make this into a poem because I saw Les doing that. So that's where, you know, I studied wherever I could because even now we're in a much better age with technology than we were 10, 15 years ago. Now you can go on YouTube and study any speaker for free, even if it's just a 4-minute clip. When I was coming up, I couldn't do any of that. If I wanted to hear Brian Tracy, I had to spend the $150 to get Brian Tracy cassette set. I had to spend the money to get Earl Nightingale cassette set. Now, you can just go on the internet if you have internet access, and Earl Nightingale, Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar, anybody, you type the name and it's going to come in. And you watch and you get better. But the thing is, you never want to copy anyone. You want to develop your own style. The reason why, like, it's so hard for someone to replace me, I'm the only person out there doing spoken word with motivation. Now, a lot of people came behind me and they started doing the poetry, but they weren't in the spoken word scene, so it doesn't have the passion and the intensity, and you see that there's something about this that's not organic or it's not authentic. So you have to develop your own style. I can never get on stage and copy Les Brown. Les is Les. Les is a master what he does. I can never be Anthony Robbins. Tony Robbins does what Tony Robbins is here to do. I have to be the best Kurt Nugent, and the person who's listening to this have to be the best you that you are. You have to know that whoever I am and whatever I bring to the table, it matters and it has value. And if I spend my time working on this diamond in the rough, which is my talent, if I spend my time polishing it, if I spend my time working with it and staying with it, eventually it's going to shine so brilliantly that it will be more attractive than magnets.
So your advice would be like, just go out there, keep doing what you're doing, keep putting yourself out there, and eventually something will add up. If you go out there with the right questions.
Start wherever you can. Start wherever you can, and not eventually something will add up. But life is very funny. If you start stepping out on faith, life start coming towards you. If you step out blindly and say, you know what, this is what I want to do, I don't care what comes down the path, I'm going to find a way to make it work. Because, again, it comes back to the question. So you start studying. Because when you're reading the books and when you're studying, what you're doing, you're preparing. And preparation is the highest form of faith. You don't prepare for something you're not expecting. If you know, you look outside and there's not a cloud in the sky, and the weathermen say today is going to be one of the top 10 most beautiful day of the year, you're not going to take an umbrella because you're not expecting rain. You only prepare for what you're expecting. If you're expecting rain, you leave out the house with an umbrella. So once you start preparing for this person you intend to be, the speaker, and you start writing your little speech, because that's what I used to do. I used to write my little speech. I used to say, okay, I want to talk about this, I want to talk about that. And you start working on that. Before you know it, just the people around you will say, you know, you're so inspiring. You should tell that story to somebody else. And you'll start meeting the people out in the woodwork that can come out and say, well, you know what, you should probably go here and speak there, and you might have to start speaking for free. That's how I started. But something will happen for you as long as you keep preparing. If you're not preparing, then you're not expecting. And if you're not expecting, we generally get what we expect.
And what right now is your process before you go speak to like a group? Like what do you do? How do you get yourself in the zone? What do you do while you're on stage? And what do you do after, like to ensure that the next speech is better?
Okay, fair enough. That's a great question. Before I'll definitely interview the person who's bringing me to speak. What are the issues? Why are you bringing me in? What challenges are the students facing? What do you want me to speak about? You know, what's going on campus? Are there any racial tension? Are the students failing? Is it poor retention? Whatever the issues are. I'll find that out, and from there, I'll put what I want to speak about in my mind. I'll write it down on paper, put it down. However, when I get to the place that I want to speak, I need to be quiet for maybe about 10 minutes before. So I don't like to get there and socialize before. I can socialize after. I'm always going to stay. I'm always going to hang out. I'm one of the easiest person to talk to. You can always come to me. But before, I need a little quiet time just to get quiet. And I like to sit in the back and just observe the audience as they walk in, watch the body language. You can kind of tell what's going on with them. When I get on stage, I know exactly what I'm going to open with, and I know what I'm going to close with. But I let everything flow in between by watching the audience, watching their reaction, seeing where we need to go. And I kind of let the spirit guide me. Now I have a game plan. I know what I want to talk about, but I'm not married to that game plan. I'm not married to a script. I don't speak with notes, and I don't read anything off the paper. I speak from my heart every time I get on stage. I have three words to describe what I do: naked and unashamed. So from there, from speaking from my heart, when you get off the stage, you'll find people coming up and say, oh, my God, you just told a story that I really needed to hear. But I had no intentions of telling that story, but I allow that spirit within me to guide me. And then after I'm done, I make sure I'm there for everybody. I'm there to chat. I'm there to socialize. We can laugh. We can talk. And we can do the Q&A, whatever you want. But that's pretty much the process. When I'm on stage, I know what I want to do, where I want to go, but I'm not married to anything per se. Everything is open, and we can go wherever the audience need to go.
When you say you know how you want to start and how you want to finish, do you mean like the general idea or like the specific things that you want to say?
Specific. It's very specific. I know from the type of my first thing when I get on stage, my very first goal is to capture your attention. That's the very first goal. So when I get on stage, the first words coming out of my mouth, it's not going to be, yes, I'd like to thank the faculty for bringing me, none of that. It's not, oh, my name is Kurt Nugent, and I've been speaking, none of that. The first words that are going to come out of my mouth is a poem. I'm not even going to tell you it's a poem. I just walk to the mic wait for the audience to get quiet, and I'll start with a poem. And that poem is, it's a poem I have on my MySpace page. It's not on YouTube. It's called I No Longer Write About Depression. But that poem in 6 minutes tells you everything you ever need to know about my life. So by the time I'm finished doing that poem, two things happen. One, you know a whole lot about me. And two, you're captivated because I'm telling you all this intense emotional stuff, but I'm making it rhyme, and it's an emotional roller coaster because at the beginning of the poem, I'm depressed. I'm going through all this horrible stuff. But by the time the poem ends, we're all in a spiritual high. Because I know while I'm doing the poem, you're cheering for me. You're hoping, my God, I hope this kid pulled through this. So by the time it ends, you're feeling higher than before I walked to the stage. And then from there, I've captured your attention. I can take you wherever we need to go. And I'm going to close by sealing the fact that I've captured your attention. I'm going to leave you walking out of the room with something to think about.
Wow. So, any final words?
Say again?
Any final words? Because I have no more questions. I am giddy and I'm smug.
Well, yes. First of all, I'm just grateful that you contacted me. I'm grateful that you reach out to me because I always want to share. I always want to give back. And a lot of people, they see the stuff on YouTube and they see MySpace and they figure, oh, this guy's inaccessible. I'm going to send him an email, but I'm not going to hear from him. And that's just not who I am. I love my audience. I love people. I love the world. So if you're listening to this and there's something you want out of life, one, believe that you can have it. You have to, because if you don't have the faith, you're not going to have the desire. You're not going to have the persistence. You're not going to have the tenacity that it takes. So believe that you can have it. Two, this has been said, because I'm not saying anything that's not been said. Never, 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 never give up. Keep hitting it. Keep punching. Keep moving. Keep believing. Keep stepping forward. It's okay to stop for a while. It's okay to catch your breath, but you got to finish the race. You got to keep running. You got to get up. It's okay to take a standing 8 count when life knocked your mouthpiece out of your mouth. It's okay. Just don't stop punching. Don't stop moving in direction. And for God's sakes, don't stop believing in your dream. It's a reason why that particular dream was placed in your heart. If I had stayed in the shadows and not pursued my dream, I can't tell you the amount of people who told me, Kirk, I was on the verge of suicide until after you spoke to me. And it's the same thing that happened with Les Brown. I was in complete darkness until Les Brown spoke some life and some light back into my life. So pursue your passion. You're here for a reason. You're here to help. You're here to heal. You're here to serve. Never, never you be unfaithful to your goals, to your talents, because those talents will lift you and take you to the top of the mountain every day, every time.
Thanks, Kirk. I mean, I couldn't have done a better interview, even if I tried. Thank you so, so much. And I think with that, I am done.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
And that was the one and only Kirk Nugent. For more information on this absolutely phenomenal human being that is Kirk Nugent, www.kirknugent.com, or go to Google, type the words MySpace and Kirk Nugent, or go to MySpace and look for Kirk Nugent's page, or just go to YouTube and type Pursue Your Passion and Kirk Nugent's name, and you'll see his phenomenal poem. Ladies and gentlemen, I think there's no better way for me to end this interview than to say Pursue Your Passion. You have been listening to the Displaced African podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog, which can be found at www.thedisplacedafrican.com.